You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, this is Listener Discretion Advice from me, Gareth Russell, author of Young and Damned and Fair, The Life of Catherine Howard, Fifth Wife of Henry VIII. Katie and Nathan have asked me to warn you that there is language in this episode as colourful as Catherine's magnificent jewellery. So if cursing or swearing isn't your proverbial cup of tea, then discretion is advised. Consider yourself warned on that count, and also consider yourself promised a fascinating episode on the life of the tragic and enigmatic Queen Catherine.
Hi, this is Katie.
And this is Nathan.
And you're listening to Queen's Podcast, the show about badass women in history.
Gasp.
Gasp. Nathan. Oh my goodness.
Is it another season of Queen's Podcast?
7 seasons.
It's like
the first day back at school.
I know. It's just like back in the habit.
Yes. Like I haven't talked to you almost every day since we've been gone. Now. But now we are back for season 7.
I am so excited to kick it off with this gal.
Yes.
Who has been on everybody's wish list.
Oh, when me and Nathan last year, when we were talking about this season, I was like, I really think we need to do her. And Nathan was like, I think we might get, you know, death threats if we don't do her pretty soon. People are getting restless. So Nathan, who are we talking about today?
Catherine Howard.
Oh. Poor baby
story
Kitty.
The story is just horrible.
Yes.
And buckle up, Buttercup.
Buckle up, Buttercup. I feel like this episode, if this is your first Queen's Podcast episode ever listening to, and you're not...
Where have you been?
Hi, welcome. But also, and you don't know anything about, like, Renaissance history, this might not be the best one to jump into. I would suggest go back and start with maybe our Catherine of Aragon episode or something, but
Cathay.
I'll link to all of those in the show notes as well. But yeah, I'm not excited because unfortunately I know how this story ends, but I'm happy to be talking to you here today.
All right. I don't want to laugh at that. It's pretty awful.
But what's not pretty awful is this drink, Nathan. Give us the deets. Give us the recipe.
Super simple, guys. Like, easy peasy, lemon squeezy, except not lemon, but peachy. So half a shot of peach schnapps, half a shot of vodka, top it off with champagne.
Ooh.
It is beautiful for a summer day.
Yes.
It is beautiful and perfect and everything's awesome until it's not.
And
that's our girl's story.
Yeah. So what's the cocktail called? Just the peachy?
Yes.
The peachy. I love it. So I thought I wasn't going to be able to drink alcohol today because I am recovering from the plague and I didn't want to have...
So by the plague, she means COVID.
So if my voice sounds a little different, that's what's going on. But I just tested negative, so I might go get some drinks after this. But I made a mocktail version of this and it is equally really, really good. I just used, I think it's just like Welch's sparkling peach grape juice with... There's this brand that makes fake vodka. Keep it around the house just in case, you know, maybe we have a friend coming over that's pregnant or doesn't drink or whatever, and we still want to make them a mocktail or something. So I put a shot of that in there and the peachy grape juice, and I put a bunch of fruit in it and a little bit of Topo Chico at the top, like, and it was
delish.
Delightful. Yeah.
Delicious.
Ooh. Okay, before we get started, we've got a couple of Patreon shout-outs.
Shout-outs!
So thank you so much to all of our Patreon supporters, Marissa, Sonia, Michelle, Emily, Christina, Tylee, Angela, Desiree, Megan, and Mary.
Also, Wilhelmina, Jean, Amber, Maribeth, Emma, Jessica, Natalie, Savannah, and Sydney.
Yes! Thank you so much to all of our Patreon supporters on every level, and just all of our listeners and followers. We love
you. You listen to us, we love you.
We love you. Because we love ourselves. And that's your best kid. You know, we love the sound of our own voices. And so we're so happy you're here.
Speak for yourself. Every time I edit, I'm like, God damn it, Nathan, shut up.
No, sometimes I catch myself editing and I'm like, this chick again. Fuck.
Preach. So let's get started.
Let's get started.
So Catherine Howard was born in... We don't know. But we know she was born between 1521 and 1526. So there's a 5-year gap-ish.
Yeah.
But most experts believe that she was born in 1523, 1524. And we know where, though.
Oh.
And that's important, right?
Yes.
At least we know that. She was born in Lambeth in England, which is near London.
Again, if you've listened to this show before, you've probably heard that last name, Howard. That's a pretty important family in England. So let's meet her dad, Edmund Howard. Edmund Howard wasn't good at very many things.
Except
being in debt. He was real good at having no money.
Same. In the early years of Henry VIII's reign as King of England, Edmund and his brother and sisters around his same age all went to work in service for the king in some way.
Right.
And they all did really well and made good marriages, made good matches, except for Edmund. He's just not super popular, y'all. He wasn't popular.
He's not popular.
He has a really bad gambling problem.
Bad. I read this one story in Gareth Russell's book where he talks about, at first, Edmund seemed like he was popular at court, and then there was like this jousting match, and everyone was letting King Henry win, but Edmund wouldn't let him win, and he kept beating him, and after that, he was just never invited back to court.
Sounds about right. Fragile dick energy.
Yes. So that is Catherine's dad. He married a somewhat wealthy widow named Joyce Culpepper, and that's Catherine's mom. Catherine's mom had 5 kids from her first marriage, and then Joyce and Edmund have 6 more kids together, so Catherine was her mother's 10th child.
Sadly, mom dies because of it.
Probably didn't help anything, geez.
But she died in 1528. That's Catherine's mom. Catherine would have been at the oldest only 4 years old.
Yeah.
So we don't know how she died or how that affected Catherine, but we don't even know if she even remembers her mom.
Yeah, I kind of wonder about that because, like, and I think this probably sets the stage for things later in Catherine's life. So her mom dies when she's 4. I feel like I remember things from when I was 4. But how much special attention would she ever have gotten from either of her parents with all these other kids running around? You know what I mean?
So, No, I completely agree.
Yeah.
And Dad very quickly marries another widow with, an inheritance.
What a coincidence.
Gambler. But by this point, he's kind of a fugitive.
Yeah.
He's always running from people who owe him money. Back then, they called that, like, debtor's prison.
Right.
Hey, if you're in debt, you're going to go to jail. That's what that means.
Yeah. I know so many people that would be in so much jail.
So much jail. So he's basically just dodging the cops all day or day.
Bad boys. What you gonna do?
What you gonna do when it comes? Bad boys.
Yes. Yeah, so we get the vibe that Catherine probably didn't see much of her dad. And in 1530, her dad reached out to his niece. Maybe you've heard of his niece. Her name was Anne Boleyn.
Maybe you've heard of her.
In 1530, Anne Boleyn was not yet Queen of England, but she was just as powerful. She was basically queen. You know, like, she pulled the strings, you know?
With the king.
So she was very powerful and influential And yeah, and so daddy writes to her being like, hey, please, for the love of God, help me out here.
Help, please.
Please.
Like, please.
Help, yes. And for her, like, family connections in the Tudor court were fucking huge. Like, it was such a big deal. So she, if she has an uncle who is literally, like, dodging the cops left and right, that looks bad for her. So she's like, she pulls some strings and gets him a job in Calais, which is in...
She's going back to Calais.
Yes.
That's in France, that's, yes. Y'all. Y'all.
France,
y'all.
So he goes to France. He moves to France, and it doesn't appear that he takes any of his children with him.
We don't know where all his kids went, but we do know that Catherine and her brother Henry were sent off to live in a house in with Edmund's stepmom. So Agnes Howard, the Dowager Duchess of Norfolk.
Oh, I love how you say it. The Dowager Duchess. I love it. Ooh.
I need that name. Dowager Duchess of Foster.
Just call yourself the Dowager Duchess of Austin. Yeah, sure.
When?
Yeah.
So this is pretty normal. And we've seen this a lot, where you send your girls off to get educated outside of the home. That's a normal practice. So this isn't like what we think of as neglect. Like, I'm sending her off so I don't have to deal with her. No, I'm sending her off to get more educated.
Yeah.
They were just more equipped to give children better educations at that time. And
right.
Send them, yeah.
Yeah, like you would, one, there was a fear that parents would spoil their kids. So that's one reason they did it, is like send them to somebody who's not, who doesn't love them as much, so they won't spoil them.
Oh, God.
But then it's also, true. Like, certain people in the country, like, specialized in, like, oh, I'm going to make sure I have the best tutors that live here, the best, you know, blah, 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 to make sure your kids do get the best education as possible. Absolutely. So Agnes had this reputation. She had a lot of kids as her quote-unquote wards. She just had a reputation of, you send your kids there to live with her, they're going to come out knowing how to act right if they want to be a lady-in-waiting to the queen, how to act right if they want to marry a duke, and da-da-da-da-da. So, yeah, it was a good place for her to go.
Very Bridgerton.
It is very Bridgerton, isn't it?
Maybe it was based on something. IDK. IDK. One thing we're going to learn about Catherine is that she's not so bookish.
And that's okay.
Yes, that's fine. She's got a lot of other qualities that are amazing and beautiful and fabulous. But because of this, she never really kept a journal. She didn't write things down. She didn't write any letters. We don't have this flowery language that we may have seen from Anne Boleyn, where, you know, you had
letters
love letters.
Letters existed. Yeah. Yeah, but unfortunately, we also, that means we don't know how she felt about.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish also that I knew if she had ever met Agnes before. It's her step-grandmother, so did they do Christmas together? Or was this, like, she never really met her before? That makes a big difference, too. Do you know what I mean?
It does. No, it does. Like, what was her influence, right?
Yeah. Like, well, she was like, oh, who's this lady? I've never met her before. Or was she like, oh, grandma's house? You know, like.
That's a big difference. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I wish that we had any idea of how she felt about this. Because, I mean, like, in quick succession, like, mom dies, dad moves overseas, you're sent to live with your grandma. And it's like, we just have no idea how she felt about any of that. And yeah, I hate that.
Sounds like trauma.
Sounds
trauma.
Like trauma.
Lots of trauma.
Childhood trauma. Sorry.
But how she felt was probably not taken into consideration, mm-hmm. like many women that we've talked about. And Agnes had a good reputation. Agnes had a good reputation for raising smart, educated women.
Yeah.
And with Catherine being the highest ranking girl there, she would have gotten all the experience of how to be a lady of the household, like how to run shit. Bitches get shit done.
Yes. just like our mugs on our merch store say. Go to TeePublic.
Winky face. Ding. Like, The hope is that maybe one day she'll marry a duke. She'll not marry a duchess. I was going to say that. And that would have been
illegal back then, yeah.
Ooh. So it's important for her to see what it's like to be a duchess, right?
Exactly.
Like, it's important for her to see the grand vision.
Now, I want to do some scene setting here of how awestruck Catherine probably would have been. Because, you know, when she lived with her parents, they had a small staff. They had maids and valets and stuff like that. But the vibe at her grandmother's place is totally different. The Dowager Duchess had a staff of 240 people.
What?
240 people were on the payroll just to make her house run.
God, I wish.
240.
I need one.
Right?
240.
So, like, along with the 240 people that ran the house, we have to also imagine that, like, priceless art is on the wall. Even the staff is in the most fashionable clothes. Everything was fancy. This was a fancy fucking place.
It was just peachy.
But, like, so imagine you're a kid. I mean, she's not coming from the slums by any means, but she walks into this place where it's like, oh, shit. Like, I'm just trying to imagine how daunting that would be. You know, like,
Overwhelming. Yes.
Overwhelming. Yes.
The Duchess was probably the wealthiest widow in the entire country. And Catherine's family have been up to this point living in shoestring, shitty situations, like bad budgets.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to balance it.
Right.
So this would have been an adjustment.
Yes.
So there's priceless arts on the wall. All the staff, always priceless art. You're dressed dripping in jewels, eleganza. All the pearls, all the diamonds, all the rupees,
yes.
All the sapphires. Yes, queen.
And I think Catherine looked around and went, okay.
As would I.
I could get used to this shit. Like, because from then on out, and for the rest of Catherine's life, she only wanted the nicest things. I mean, who doesn't? But I think
same.
Yeah. She came from, you know, her family that were basically kind of like social outcasts. And now she's in a spot where she is exposed to the nicest things. And she's like, oh, no. I am never going back. This is,
yeah,
I'm
going
to do whatever it takes to maintain this kind of, honestly, security. Because it doesn't seem like she had it in her home with her mom and her dad. She's like, I like this security. This is comfortable. This is me for the rest of my life.
And
can you blame her?
No. Who could?
No.
Like,
yeah.
I like fancy things, too. And I don't want to go back to trash.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
And I think little baby Catherine looked around and went, kind of like this shit.
I like it. I'm going to stay around.
All right. So what would her day-to-day life look like now? So etiquette was a huge part of her education. It was her education. I mean, she knew how to read and write, but the big focus in her upbringing was that she needed to be suitable for someone really important one day.
Yeah.
And so she has to carry herself like a lady.
Yes. And let us tell you, Catherine was good at it. She understood the fucking assignment. When it was like etiquette training, she was like, I am going to be the most poised. I am going to be perfect. And everyone that met her from a very young age was like, what a well-behaved little girl. This little girl obviously knows her shit. Like, you know, like what fork to use, speak when to be spoken to, the kind of curtsy to do, all that stuff that you and I would be completely lost.
No.
But no, she was perfect. She always looked perfect. She always dressed perfect. She always knew when to speak, what to say, knew everyone's titles. Literally everyone that came around to visit the Dowager Duchess would see her granddaughter Catherine and be like, she is such a testament to your good work, how good you are at like bringing up these girls. She's the perfect child. She's gonna make the best wife for some really important dude one day.
Yeah, and also since a lot of non-noble families sent their daughters to be educated there, those girls were more or less Catherine's ladies in waiting,
yeah,
if you shall.
Yeah.
Because that was part of her education, right? Like, it was learning how to run your staff and your home and your this and your that. So those girls would all hope to one day maybe have jobs being a lady in waiting to a duchess or countess or princess or whatever. So it's just a good practice for everyone.
Everyone's
right?
getting like a practical education. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so if the Duchess was at home, Catherine and her brother would sit at the table with her for dinner and, like, whoever she has over for dinner, because she liked to host quite a lot, while the rest of the people that were, like, wards, so the other girls and stuff, had a different table to sit at. So, again, I think this is really, this probably made her feel special. This probably made her feel important and reminded her of, like, if I just stay on this path of being so well-behaved and, like, having my manners to a T, this is my future. The main table. The main table for me or bust is basically what she felt.
And when the Duchess wasn't there... things are a little different, yeah. If you couldn't tell by the inflection in our voices. Agnes went to court a lot, and this woman was a massive, massive gossip. So she loved to be at court so she could see what everyone was wearing, who was there, who took who to court, what love affairs were happening, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Hashtag... Relatable,
yeah. That would have been me. I would have been like, well, I'm going back. Because, I mean, gossip back then. Gossip at the Tudor court was currency, basically.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, it was...
You were smarter if you knew what was going on in court.
Yes. Yeah. A hundy. So whenever, when the Duchess was at court, things were a lot more lax around the house. Like, they were supposed to just carry on as usual, which they did. But, like, when the Duchess wasn't around, like, Catherine and her little ladies-in-waiting would stay up till midnight gossiping and play pranks on their teachers and stuff like that, which is just, like, normal 9-year-old kid stuff, you know?
Right? Yeah. Like, you get to be a kid. Yay.
Yay.
Now, it does seem like Catherine did have some anxiety issues,
yeah.
Which also kind of relatable.
Also hashtag relatable.
Yeah, right? She would beat herself up if she made a mistake as a kid.
Yeah.
She would stress the fuck over it or stress out because of it and always made sure she remembered everybody's names. Checking, double checking, triple checking, OCD-ish.
Yeah. That, like, kind of like, oh, I'm supposed to look the best. Like, oh, am I sure I have the right shoes on? I got to check my shoes again. You know, just like things,
yep.
like I can just feel the anxiety coming off of it because her entire worth has been put on that she's the perfect child, do you know?
She's got to be perfect, 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 perfect. So, of course, that stresses her the fuck out.
Yes.
But I guess when you're being told your whole life that how you present yourself is the only thing that matters, that's all that is what her
worth
has been built up to,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
I hate this for her already.
If you're not 100%, because she knows what her life was before she came to the house of the Duchess. If I'm not 100% perfect, I'm going to go back to living a life running from the cops. You know, like, so...
Yeah.
That's a lot for a child.
Yeah, she took that shit to heart. And when she was stressed out, it was really common for her to snap, you know, and... I feel that on a whole another level. Like, sometimes when you're so stressed out, it's just like temper.
What is the, like, so tight, like a tight wire, you know, like it's going to break.
Katie's
like,
pulling a string.
Yeah, you can't see. I'm pulling an invisible string. But no, she would have a really bad temper. And on more than one occasion, whenever she was young, the girls that were her friends, I mean, the girls that were her ladies in waiting, they were also her friends, you know, and she never necessarily treated them like, oh, you're below me, until she would have her little snap temper tantrums, and then it was just like she could be really mean to them and yell at them, you know, do some physical abuse, but like not physical abuse, some verbal abuse. You're below me, blah 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 blah. You know, that was out of character for her otherwise. So anxiety is a son of a bitch.
Yeah,
yeah.
Preach.
Yeah.
Another good thing that came from living with her grandmother was exposure to her family, right? Yeah. Her whole Howard family. Since everyone kind of avoided her dad because he was a little bit problematic back then, Catherine probably didn't know a bunch about her aunts, her uncles, and didn't know anything about that. But now they're coming over to visit the Dowager Duchess.
Dowager Duchess.
All the time. And remember, it was only her dad who wasn't popular. The rest of the family was totally successful, influential. There was nothing about that.
Yeah.
So it's good because, yay, she's getting to know her family, but it's also good because prospects.
Future yeah, like, oh, maybe one of them can keep me in mind if there's ever a duke that needs a wife. Like, what or whatever. You
yes,
know?
Yes.
Everyone always said the same thing about Catherine, is that she was such a well-behaved little girl, but more than anything else, is that she was so pretty. So that is child Catherine. We're going to skip ahead and get into teenager Catherine. But first, I think I need a refill on my peachy drink.
Because everything's so peachy. Because
everything's just going to be great from here on.
Liza Minnelli. Lies.
We'll be right back.
Hello everyone, it's Takuya here.
And I'm Gabby.
And we are the hosts of History of Everything, a podcast which you can probably guess by the name is, well, I mean, it's about everything. Do you want to know why people thought potatoes were evil and would give you syphilis? Are you curious about all the stories of the terrible and stupid ways that people have kicked the bucket over the years? Do you want to hear tales about all of the different badasses of history and the lives that they had brought to life? Well, if so, then look no further. History of Everything is just the right podcast for you. It's available on Spotify, Pandora, and anywhere else that you get your podcast from. Join us for some fun and just see how weird and wacky history can be.
I'm Helena Bonham Carter, and for BBC Radio 4, this is History's Secret Heroes, a new series of rarely heard tales from World War II.
They had no idea that she was Britain's top female codebreaker.
We'll hear of daring risk-takers.
What she was offering to do was to ski in over the high Carpathian Mountains.
Of course it was dangerous, but danger was his friend.
Subscribe to History's Secret Heroes wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back! Like we said, we're going to skip a little bit forward, fast forward. And she's 13 years old. And that's when Agnes starts to realize that maybe Catherine's education had been neglected a little bit.
A little bit.
All the noble girls at the time were expected to know how to play at least one musical instrument, and Catherine did not.
She did not.
So a couple of music teachers were hired.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I said that. Spoiler alert, hear it in my voice.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, this was kind of late. Like, music teachers were used to teaching kids that were, like, 5 years old. So the fact that she's 13, it was back. Also, you have to remember that in the 1500s, 13 was considered a young adult. Which I know, using our, like, social conventions
our
now.
Normal brains.
And knowing that's what we know about, like, cognitive development and stuff like that, now we're like, 13 was a young adult. But when you're a 13-year-old in the 1500s, that was kind of more of like being like a 17-year-old is kind of how it was viewed now. It's icky, but I feel like that's important to kind of keep in your mind.
It is. It's awful.
Everything. You know what? Maybe just, hey, everything from here for like the next 20 minutes is icky.
Yes. One of those music teachers brought in was a guy named Henry Mannix. And Henry was in his early 20s.
What?
And we will learn that he is very much Catherine's type. Mm-hmm. Handsome, a little bit cocky, full of himself, and maybe not like the smartest guy in the room.
We've all been guilty of dating this type. Look.
Yes.
Look.
At your life. Look at your choices.
Now, Catherine and Henry started some kind of physical relationship soon after he joined the household. And now this is not unheard of, because all of her little ladies in waiting, they all pretty much had boyfriends from the household staff. So I'm sure, I mean, she's 13. When you're 13, you just want boys to like you. And so I'm sure she was also like, well, if all my friends have boyfriends, why can't I have a boyfriend too? And why not a musician? Bitches love musicians.
It's true.
It's true.
And a lot of people view what Henry Mannix was doing was grooming.
Yeah. I want to be very careful about how we approach this subject as well, because, oh, it's just icky, you know?
How can it not be icky?
How can it not be? Yeah.
Because he's a grown-ass man and she's 13. And
bingo!
While it's fucking 1,000% icky, and Catherine probably didn't understand what she was getting into, I think it's also to remember that 13 wasn't a child back then, so they expected her to be an adult. Hashtag anxiety.
Oh, God. No, yeah. We're not saying it's not creepy, because it absolutely is creepy, but to society back then, it's not as icky as we view it now.
I wish they just would have understood age gaps.
Yeah, or... that he was her teacher also.
There's an authoritative figure. Either way, Catherine was smitten kitten. She was all down for it. And it was probably exciting to her.
Yeah.
Like, they'd sneak off after school and find a little hidden corner of the manor to just go and make out in. And they never went all the way.
They didn't fully bump butts, no.
No bumping butts. And... this went on for 2 years.
That surprised me of how long. And when you're 13, 2 years is a million years, you know? But one day, I think they didn't know that Agnes was home from court. And she caught them making out. And she loses her fucking shit. Like, she absolutely freaks out. And she slaps Catherine across the face.
Wait.
And she yells at Mannix. Yeah.
Okay, wait. You should reverse that.
Yep.
Slap Mannix on the face and yell at Catherine. Like, what?
Yep. Yep. Agnes is not a perfect person, as we're going to learn.
What I really don't get is that she didn't fire Mannix.
Why did she fire him? Why did
she should have.
you're making out with the girls that I'm responsible for. Fire the motherfucker. It really pisses me off.
It pisses me off, too. Like, she's not a perfect person. And by that, I mean Agnes is not a perfect person.
No.
And, like, you're paying one of these people to keep your child safe.
To teach them. And your reputation hangs on that these girls come out of your school, like, perfect.
But then to take your anger out on the girl who, it's like, wrong person. Like, channel that energy into someone else.
It's incredibly frustrating. I feel like we need to move on because we're not going to get any relief from this. And we're like, it just pisses me off so much. So I think what the reason behind this, and we'll find this later too, I think Agnes just really liked having hot guys on her staff.
Oh, okay.
Especially ones that are funny and charming as well. I think maybe she had the same type as that Catherine Howard had. She's like, I don't want to fire the cute guy and have to hire an uggo. Is honestly, that is what, because we'll see it again a little bit later, but that's what I feel like it comes down to with this situation, which is also
gross. Yes, that's what that noise is. But I feel like if my job was to raise my young granddaughter to be the perfect wife, maybe I'd take a little bit more responsibility in this situation and fire the fucking creepy musician. he was weirdo, but she freaks out on Catherine. Like, stop blaming the woman.
Yes.
I said it here first.
The child.
Or the child, like, same.
The girl.
Stop blaming the girl.
Yeah. So yeah, their relationship was going on for about 2 years, like we said, and that's about the time that Mannix started, like, really pressuring Catherine to have sex. They had done pretty much everything else, but they had never gone all the way. And Catherine starts to get the ick whenever he's pressuring her so hard, which...
As one would.
I think that is also something that we should look at with, like, yeah, okay, she was considered to be a woman, but when it comes to, like, the actual physical part of it, I think that's awesome that she had She had the autonomy to not be, to not feel pressured into it, you know? She didn't, yeah, she liked him, and she was boy crazy, but not to the point where she was going to do something that she didn't want to do. There's been a lot of girls that were young that were pressured into doing something they didn't want to do, so I think that also does show us something about her personality. She's, you're not going to make her do something she doesn't want to do.
No, I agree.
And that kind of makes me love her, you know?
I just love her in general.
I just love her anyway.
Finally, Catherine was like, nope, I'm over it.
Bye.
Over this, over it. And she broke up with him, and Mannix was like, flabbergasted. Didn't see it coming. How dare you? some people overheard them having a fight in which they said she was unnecessarily cruel in what she said to him while breaking up, which things about his rank, his family. Yeah. Like, it was stuff like that.
Like, my grandfather was a duke, and you think
she probably called him a peasant.
Probably. She definitely had a mean streak when she needed to. Not on her day-to-day, but when she needed to. She could be ruthless, which makes... I wish we knew...
Same.
I wish we knew her sign.
Scorpio.
That's what I was wondering. But you know what? I get it. Have you ever tried to break up with somebody and they just weren't getting it through their fucking head? And so maybe you need to say, use stronger language than you necessarily wanted to in the first place? Dude, I'm a member of one of the most influential families in the fucking country. Get it through your head. This is not happening. We're done.
Yes. And that was the end of boyfriend beau number one.
Beau number one.
And now Catherine is 16 years old and she's single, ready to mingle. And if everyone thought she was so, so pretty as a child, well, then get the fuck out of here, because at 16, she is now a stone cold certified hottie patati.
Hot tea. We don't know exactly what she looked like, because none of the portraits that we know today, like when people, if you Google Catherine Howard, none of those are like confirmed Catherine Howard portraits. But we do know she was hot. She was hot. And every man that fell in love with her, and probably some of the ladies too.
Catherine knew her effect on men, and she loved it.
Yes.
I mean, let's check the facts. She probably hadn't received a lot of attention growing up. Her dad doesn't seem like he was super duper family oriented, and he bounced around a lot and left the country because hashtag debt.
Hello, daddy issues.
And we don't know a whole lot about her mom, but she had so many kids that I doubt any of them got special attention. So she probably loved all of this attention that she got because she looked beautiful and she was this woman of the court.
I'm special now. Yeah. Yeah. I just go, you know, hug your kids.
That's the moral of the story.
Moral of the story.
Tell them they're beautiful.
Hug your fucking kids. Make them feel special. In the spring of 1538, the Dowager Duchess moved her primary residence to Norfolk House in Lambeth. And not long after that, she met this a super cute guy that worked as the Duchess's private secretary. And his name was Francis Derham. And she was like, oh, who is that?
Franny with the panties.
Okay.
So Francis was a huge player. He had actually already slept with one of the Catherine's ladies in waiting, and that girl told Catherine, like, oh, he is a romp in the sheets. He's so much fun. You should def talk to him. So she did. Spoiler alert.
Oh, she did more than talk to him, am I right?
She did.
A little about Derham. He was very much Catherine's type. Very similar with Mannix in that he's handsome. He's cocky. He's maybe a little bit full of himself, and he maybe doesn't think before he says things out loud. Now, his family was a little bit more connected than Mannix's family had been, like a little bit wealthier, just more connections, but still, you know, not nowhere near like Catherine's reach potential. But he was very, very charming, and the Duchess, the Dowager Duchess Agnes, loved having him around. We all know that too handsome for his own good guy that like can't help but flirt with anything that lives, right?
Yeah, no, we all
know a Francis Derham, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Dereham was also into Catherine. Like we said, everyone was into her. Like, she's this beautiful, fabulous woman. And it wasn't long before the two of them became an official item.
Yes. Okay, so let's set the scene a little bit. All the girls lived in this part of the mansion that is called the Maiden's Chamber. And at night, the Duchess would send all the girls to bed. So it was kind of almost like a dorm room, like a big room. Okay. Yeah. Where everybody had beds that they shared and like a common area where everybody could like get dressed together kind of thing. So at night, the Duchess would go to bed, send all the girls to their Maiden's Chamber. And she had a key that locked the door from the outside. So the girls couldn't sneak off and get into mischief, which also seems like a fire hazard, but whatever.
Neither here nor there.
Neither here nor there. This is some shit that 17-year-old Katie would have definitely pulled. So I absolutely
relate.
From Catherine to Catherine, let's talk about this. She snuck into the Dowager Duchess's room, found the key, and convinced, like, the blacksmith or whatever to make a copy for her.
This is from Catherine to Catherine.
From Catherine to Catherine. Went and put the key back before the Dowager Duchess realized it was gone and gave the new copy to Dereham.
Okay, bad girl. Francis and the other young men that worked in the house would come up after the Duchess had gone to sleep. They'd get wine, some snacky snacks. They'd go from the kitchen to the bedroom, which I relate. and the girls and guys would stay up flirting, talking to each other, drinking wine up until 3 a.m. This is from Catherine to Catherine.
From Catherine to Catherine, yeah, I know. Oh, no, I've always thought I was Anne Boleyn. Am I Catherine Howard?
Possibly.
All right. Flirting and drinking wine isn't all they did. Because within the first couple of months of her knowing Dereham, they definitely did go all the way. Like, without a doubt. They would basically have sex. So in, like, the dorm room or whatever, all the girls would share beds. But the beds might have, like, curtains around them. And so they would close the curtains on the bed so no one could see them. But people could definitely hear them.
Yeah, like, curtains don't drown out the sound.
That I hate, but...
Exactly. Some of Catherine's friends at the house were worried about her. Like, girl, you're going to get pregnant, and what's your plan after that?
What's your plan?
What you got? Like, hello? Or what if he brags about boning you, and the word gets out? Like, you're quote-unquote spoiled at that point.
Or damaged, like, goods, with big air quotes, yeah.
Yeah. Because for girls like Catherine, a good reputation was the only thing that mattered. Yes. Like, if she was partying with boys until 3 a.m., that alone ruins the reputation.
Right.
Like, let alone having premarital sex. Like, that's not.
But she's a teenager. Teenagers are horny. And she thinks she's in love. For a time, she really does actually think she's in love with Dereham. The world will never figure out how to stop horny teenagers from having sex with each other, you know?
You can't. It's just
Yeah, and she was, so much of her life was unsupervised as well. So,
Catherine and Dereham only dated for a few months, but it was intense for a few months. And they did not hide it at all. Mm-hmm. None of it was under the sheets. Well, some of it was under the sheets, but Everyone knew.
Except for the Dowager Duchess. We don't know if she... So when the Dowager Duchess finds out, we don't know if she found out that they were going all the way, but she eventually figured out that they were an item. But maybe she thought it was like how it was with Mannix, just like making out and flirting. But she walks in on them one day, just like casually, like holding hands or hugging, like not anything super racy, but still enough to be like, what the fuck? And she slaps Catherine.
Again.
She does. Now this time she does slap Dereham as well.
I do not condone physical violence, but like at least it's equal.
At least it's equal this time. Yeah. Like, and then screamed at them and like threw like a huge temper tantrum, Yeah.
She said they needed to call it off in their relationship, but again, she didn't fire the dude.
I just don't understand this woman.
Me neither. Like, you're concerned about your granddaughter's reputation and the reputation of your house? Fire the dude that is spoiling the reputation of your house.
Thank you.
Katie just did this headbanging move. That was like, just, hello, obvious.
Oh my gosh. But again, Darum is cute and charming and probably flirts with her and like makes her feel good about herself. So he doesn't lose his job. And eventually the Dowager Duchess gives up trying to keep them apart. She's just like, okay, fine, whatever.
So put a pin in that. Keep that in mind. Everyone knew that they were in this romantic relationship, but some people knew, but not everybody knew that they were fucking. The Duchess certainly didn't take any steps to stop the physical relationship, right? Like, she didn't do anything to be like, yo, bro, stop.
This woman got to die of natural causes in her bed, so lucky her. Not everybody will be so lucky. Don't Google it.
I don't mean to laugh, but...
but it's just so fucked up. I can't. It's just so fucked up. What else can you do sometimes, you know? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So everything about this relationship went fast. They fell for each other fast. They slept together fast. And after a couple of months, Darum starts asking Catherine what she thought about getting married one day. And honestly, I think Catherine, like when I was 16, if the guy, 16, 17, the guy that I was dating was like, what about getting married one day? I'd be like, oh, well, yeah, we'll have two cars and a house in the garage. You know, like just... and so I kind of think that's what her response was, like kind of more like funny fantasy joking. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, yeah. Absolutely.
And they started to call each other husband and wife, kind of like, you know, me and my husband have cute little pet names for each other. Same kind of thing, like husband, wife, hello. But it reads to me more like a joke, like a pet name. Like, I don't think Catherine was ever serious about wanting to marry Darum.
But before long, Catherine felt that Darum was, like, suffocating her. He's obsessed with her. He always wants her around. She never had freedom or a moment to herself and just felt pressured in this pressuring marriage. And he's calling her his wife. He's possessive. And to say the least, Catherine was like, what did I get myself into? What are you doing? What are you doing?
Have you ever been in a relationship with that? Like, where it's just like, they don't understand that you need your you time. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I am one person that anytime I enter a relationship, I'm like, I need a day. One day where I crash and it's fine. This is fine.
I become part of the couch and talking to you is not part of that. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah.
Healthy. It's healthy.
Darum did not compute.
Does not compute.
Yeah. Let's take a second to discuss marriage and engagement in Tudor England. For royal couples, you'd use the term pre-contract for an engagement a lot of the time. And it's exactly what it sounds like. And agreed upon, like, oh, when they get married, they get these lands, they get da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And once the pre-contract was signed, it was legally binding. And those were hell to get out of, which I feel like we discussed quite a bit in the Anne of Cleves episode. Because remember, she was pre-contracted to a guy before Henry VIII. Yeah.
Yeah. But for non-royal couples, it looks a little less formal. Like, after they stated that they wanted to marry each other, it's really common that they started sleeping together. So, like, the trip down the aisle was just formality.
Yeah. Like, I've heard... once they stated their intent to marry each other, started sleeping together, they would just sometimes go to with each other in front of like a priest and be like, this is my husband, this is my wife. And the priest would be like, okay. And that counted, you know, like why even deal with the anxiety of having a wedding, the money, bada bing, bada boom.
Same.
Yeah. So if they were already calling themselves husband and wife and sleeping together, in some people's eyes, they would have been considered married. So yeah. Just keep that in mind.
It seems that one day Catherine looked at the situation and was like,
Oh my god.
He calls me wife and we sleep together, but I have to eventually marry a duke or an earl or something, like equal or above me. I want to go to work at the royal court one day. And I want to be in the middle of the gossip
I
and the
be
fashion.
Where the gossip is. I want to hear the drama. Girl, same.
You didn't even have to say same. I just saw it in your face. Like, he doesn't want... Like...
This is very serious. If you could focus, that would be great.
Like, she doesn't want to be the wife of a secretary.
Right.
Right? She wants to be Catherine Howard.
Like, yes. So she starts to distance herself from Darum, and he panics and just becomes more obsessive. Like, he like, doubles down on, like, where are you going? Who's going to be there? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And he'd show up to hang out, and she'd be like, I can't. I'm sick. And boo, you
mean
whore.
Girls.
Yeah. And she's just really trying to distance herself, and he is freaking the fuck out.
So clingy much?
Yes.
Like, so let's distance ourselves from the moment. So we're going to take a quick break.
Yes. Top of our drinks, and we'll be right back.
Everybody shush! William Shatner has something to say.
Cat and Jethro, box of oddities.
What do you do when the woman you love dies? Well, of course you dig her up and you live with her.
Aww.
The show examines weird things.
There are plenty of old photographs from this time period of children out in the streets playing in and among the dead horse carcasses.
Oh, I miss those days. Things used to be so much simpler.
Cat and Jethro.
Then there's the urine wheel, which sounds like a really bad game show.
Thing done weird things. Cat and Jethro, box of oddities. That is really mysterious.
Join Cat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
The Webby Award-winning Box of Oddities podcast from Airwave Media.
Have you ever wished that you had a direct line to your pediatrician to ask them all the questions that constantly crop up while parenting? Well, we hear you, and we have been there too. That's why we launched the Bites of Health podcast. Every morning, we'll answer a commonly asked pediatric question in 5 minutes or less. You can tune in while you're making your second cup of coffee or from the school drop-off line. Who are we? I'm Dr. Jess Steyer, a public health scientist and also co-host of the Unbiased Science podcast. Every day, I'll chat with one or both of your new pediatrician besties, Dr. Dina DiMaggio, a general pediatrician, and Dr. Anthony Porto, a pediatric gastroenterologist. We'll talk about all the things related to our kids' health, from dealing with a colicky infant to navigating puberty in the teenage years. So be sure to tune in to Bites of Health, now live on all podcast platforms.
Okay, and we're back, and change of conversation real quick. So in March 1539, Catherine's dad dies. Now, Edmund's gone, and like the Howard family looks around, and they kind of look at Catherine like, this is our responsibility now. Like, and they are like, let's go ahead and get all of Edmund's unmarried kids married, or get them jobs, or let's just take care of them so they're not like dependent on us. So not long after Edmund's funeral, her uncle came to visit Lambeth House, and her uncle is a very, very powerful duke.
Yeah. So his name is Thomas Howard, and he'd been traveling around Europe lately to secure the king a new bride, and that new bride was Anne of Cleves.
Anne of Cleves.
And she'd be coming to England in just a few months. She was going to need ladies-in-waiting from noble families throughout England, and the duke was like, oh my god, I've got the perfect spot for you, Catherine.
Yes.
As one of her junior ladies-in-waiting.
And Catherine, can you imagine, like, this girl who all she's ever wanted to do was, like, be in the glitz and glamour, was like,
I've got a golden ticket.
Yes! Yes.
Like, that's what she felt.
Like, I get to go to court where the drama and the fashion and the beauty and the gossip.
Everything
like,
that I have lived up to this moment.
And because she was going to court, they also had, like, she couldn't go in her, like, 5 or 6 dresses she had. So she got a whole new wardrobe on top of it. So I get it. So let me get this straight. I get to go to court. I get a new wardrobe. I get to meet the king. I get to work for the queen. I get to meet people coming from all over the world. Sign me the fuck up. Can I go now? Can I go right now? Like, yeah, now? I'm, like, right now, right now? Like,
right now? I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it.
Yes.
He's excited is what we're getting at. Francis was less
excited.
The two had a huge fight.
Well, he's like,
it.
You're leaving me? And she's like,
Kinda.
Yeah.
But, like, dude, get it through your fucking head. We're not getting married. I am going to London to work as a lady in waiting for the fucking queen. What part of this don't you understand?
Get it through your head. Again, people say, like, surviving records say that she was, like, meaner than she needed to be when breaking up with him. But some people don't fucking listen. When I give people criticism, I like to give it to them in a sandwich. Compliments are the bread. Sandwich. And the criticism is the middle part.
It's called shit sandwich.
Sure.
It's a shit sandwich. Like, you compliment, criticism, compliment,
yes.
Compliment.
But some people don't get it when you do it nicely like that. And I think Frances Darham was one of these people that just didn't fucking get it. So she had to be maybe a little bit ruder than when that was necessary. But to save face, Frances told everyone that while she was, like, telling him she had to go to court, she was crying and telling everybody, like, oh, I don't want to go to court, but my family's making me. I'm so sorry that we're going to have to be apart from each other. And when it got back to Catherine that this is what he was telling everyone, she was just sort of like, whatever makes you feel better, buddy. That's okay. Like, sure. Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Okay, bro.
Okay.
And in the late fall or early winter of 1539, Catherine Howard arrives to Hampton Court Palace, and they're preparing for the arrival of the next queen of England.
Yes. Now, you need to understand how exciting this was for everyone to have a queen again. Jane Seymour, the third wife of Henry VIII, has been dead for about 3 years. This is the longest he's gone without a wife. And when there's no queen, there's no women at court. Like, all the women that are at court work for the queen. So Hampton Court Palace had been a sausage fest for 3 years.
And sounds like a good time to me.
You know what?
But not for everyone else.
Oh, no, I could see you like somewhere with just men for 3 years being like, why does no one here want to talk about Rue, the drag race show? Like, what is it?
Yeah, why like, why does anyone not want to put on makeup?
Like, what
somebody,
is,
please.
What? Yeah, I could see you getting sick of that kind of sausage fest.
I would. But now, in preparation for Anne of Cleves' arrival, all the ladies in waiting are showing up back to court.
Yeah.
And it's like this breath of fresh air. Oh, you know, feminine energy is kind of awesome. And Henry, the king, is feeling like a young man again.
He's invigorated.
Like, oh, flirty, fabulous. He's feeling his oats. And he really liked having ladies around again. Like, there's no way around that.
And I have to imagine Catherine Howard there with, like, stars in her eyes. You know, like, just, like, shocked to be meeting the king, you know, because she certainly she would never have met him before. She wouldn't have spent time in court. So she's like, oh, my goodness. Like, But let's also, like, get it straight that she was not, like, attracted to him when they met. And no part of her mind was thinking that they would ever have any kind of romantic relationship. She was just starstruck, you know?
Yeah. And given everything we know about Catherine, how do you think she did at court? Like, she's beautiful. She knows how to present herself. She's flirty. She's gossipy. She loves to dance. Hashtag, she was popular.
Popular.
Very popular.
Popular. Yeah. King Henry VIII was about 48 or 49 at the time. He had once been considered like a very charming and handsome man, but those days are behind him. He is in his Nero era, to be honest.
It's true. Post-jousting accident.
Yes.
But with the pending arrival of the new queen, he had some pep in his step again. Like, the king is happy, everyone's happy, everything's wonderful. And Catherine would have started her career as a courtier in a very exciting time. Like, love and excitement is in the air.
Yes. And not just for the king either. After arriving, Catherine pretty much immediately meets this man named Thomas Culpepper. Hmm. And once again, she is smitten kitten. She falls hard for him. Nathan, tell us what he was like.
Handsome? Check. Cocky? Check. Not the smartest man in the room? Check. Homegirl, she has a type.
She was hook, line, and sinker. She was like, absolutely. But after dating for like a month or so, she refuses to sleep with him, and he breaks up with her. She has never experienced rejection before, and she is crushed. She is brokenhearted. She, in front of her other, like, junior ladies in waiting, would cry and cry and cry and cry and just be like, why did this happening? She just didn't know. She never... No, she's the hottest chick in the room. Nobody's ever dumped her before.
And but this... girl, pick your head up, get it together, because the new queen has arrived. And Anne of Cleves lands in England, and now all her training, all of that education is put to work at royal court.
Yes.
Because she has to bag herself a good man for her family, like, and
no time to cry over a boy.
No time. And now she has the rest of her life ahead of her to make a family proud. She knows how to be perfect. She knows how to do all this shit. And that's where we're going to leave her for today.
Don't Google it.
All right. Cheers, bitches.
Cheers, bitches.